There is a hollow, holy cylinder running from hilt to point in my machete. When I blow across the mouthpiece and the handle, I make music with my blade. When all the holes are covered, the sound is sad, as rough can be, and be called smooth. When all the holes are open, the sound pipes about, bringing to the eye flakes of sun on water, crushed metal. There are 20 holes. And since I've been playing music, I've been called all different kinds of fool, more time than Lobi, which is my name. What I look like? Ugly and grinning most of the time. That's a whole lot of big nose and gray eyes and wide mouth crammed on a small brown face, proper for a fox. That all scratched about with spun brass for hair. I hack most of it off every 2 months or so with my machete. Grows back fast, which is odd, because I'm 23 and no beard yet. I have a figure like a bowling pin, thighs, calves, and feet of a man, gorilla, twice my size, which is about 5'9", and hips to match. There was a rash of hermaphrodites the year I was born, which doctors thought I might be. Somehow, I doubt it. Like I say, ugly. My feet have toes almost as long as my fingers, and the big ones are semi-opposable, but don't knock it. Once I saved little John's life. We were climbing the barrel face, slipping around on all that glassy rock, when little John lost his footing and was dangling by one hand. I was hanging by my hands, but I stuck my foot down, grabbed him up by the wrist, and pulled him back where he could step on something. At this point, Lo Hawk folds his arms over his leather shirt, nods sagely so that his beard bobs on his ropey neck, says, "And just what were you two young low men doing on the barrel face in the first place? It's dangerous, and we avoid danger, you know. The birth rate is going down, down all the time. We can't afford to lose our productive youth in foolishness." Of course, it isn't going down, that's just Lo Hawk. What he means is that the number of total norms is going down, but there's plenty of births. Lo Hawk is from the generation where the number of non-functionals, idiots, mongoloids, and cretins was well over 50%. We hadn't adjusted to your images yet. Ah, well. But now there are noticeably more functionals than non-functionals, so no great concern. Anyway, not only do I bite my fingernails disgracefully, I also bite my toenails. And at this point I recall sitting at the entrance of the source cave, where the stream comes from the darkness and makes a sickle of light into the trees, and a blood spider big as my fist suns himself on a rock beside me, belly pulsing out from the sides of him, leaves flicking each other above. Then La Carol walks by with a sling of fruit over her shoulder and the kid under her arm. We had an argument once, whether it was mine or not. One day it had my eyes, my nose, my ears, the next, "Can't you see it's Low Easy's boy? Look how strong he is." Then we both fell in love with other people, and now we're friends again. And she makes a face and says, "Lo Lobi, what are you doing?" "Biting my toenails. What does it look like?" "Oh, really?" And she shakes her head and goes into the woods toward the village. But right now, I prefer to sit on the flat rock, sleep, think, gnaw, or sharpen my machete. It's my privilege, Sola Dyer tells me. Until a little while ago, Low Little John, Low Easy, and Low Me herded goats together, which is what we were doing on the barrel face, looking for pasture. We made quite a trio. Little John, though a year older than me, will, till death, look like a small black 14-year-old with skin smooth as volcanic glass. He sweats through his palms, the soles of his feet, and his tongue. No real sweat glands. Piddles like a diabetic on the first day of winter or a very nervous dog. He's got silver mesh for hair, not white silver. The pigment's based on the metal pure. The black skin comes from a protein formed around the oxide. None of that rusty iron brown of melanin that suntans you and me. He sings, being a little simple, running and jumping from the rocks and goats, flashing from head and groin and armpits, then stops to cock his leg, like a nervous dog, yeah, against a tree trunk, glancing around with embarrassed black eyes. Smiling, those eyes fling as much light on a different frequency as his glittering head. He's got claws, hard, sharp, horny ones, where I have nubs. He's not a good low to have mad at you. Easy, on the other hand, is large, about 8 feet tall, furry, umber hair curls all down the small of his back, makes ringlets on his belly, strong. That 326 pounds of Easy is really a lot of rock jammed jagged into his pelt. His muscles have corners, and gentle. Once I got angry at him when one of the fertile nannies fell down a rock chimney. I saw it coming. The ewe was the big blind one who had been giving us perfect norm triplets for 8 years. I stood on one foot and threw rocks and sticks with the other three limbs. It takes a rock on the head to get Easy's attention. He was much closer than I was. Watch it, you non-functional, lost low mongoloid. She's gonna fall in the... At which point she did. Easy stopped looking at me with his "What are you throwing stones at me for?" face, saw her scrabbling at the edge, dove for her, missed, and both of them started bleeding. I put my awl behind the rock that caught him on the hip and almost cried. Easy did. He crouched at the chimney edge, tears wetting the fur on his cheek. The ewe had broken her neck at the chimney's bottom. Easy looked up and said, "Don't hurt me no more, Loby. That..." He knuckled his blue eyes, then pointed down. "Hurts too much already." What can you do with a low like that? Easy has claws, too. All he ever uses them for is to climb the Titan palms and tear down mangoes for the children. Generally, we did a good job with the goats, though. Once little John leaped from the branch of an oak to the back of a lion and tore out its throat before it got to the herd, and rose from the carcass, shook himself, and went behind a rock, glancing over his shoulder. And as gentle as he is, Easy crushed a black bear's head with a log, and I got my machete all ambidextrous, left-footed, right-handed, or vice versa. Yeah, we did a good job. Not no more. What happened was Frieza. Frieza, or La Frieza, was always a point of debate with the older folk doctors and the elders who have to pass on titles. She looked normal. Slim, brown, full mouth, wide nose, brass-colored eyes. I think she may have been born with six fingers on one hand, but the odd one was non-functional, so a traveling doctor amputated it. Her hair was tight, springy, and black. She kept it short, though once she found some red cord and wove it through. That day she wore bracelets and copper beads, strings and strings. She was beautiful and silent. When she was a baby, she was put in the cage with the other non-functionals because she didn't move. No law. Then a keeper discovered she didn't move because she already knew how. She was as agile as a squirrel's shadow. She was taken out of the cage, got her law back. But she never spoke. So, at age 8, when it was obvious that the beautiful orphan was mute, away went her law. They couldn't very well put her back in the cage. Functional she was, making baskets, plowing, an expert huntress with the bolus. That's when there was all the debate. Low Hawk upheld. In my day, law and low were reserved for total norms. We've been very lax giving this title of purity to any functional who happens to have the misfortune to be born in these confusing times. To which La Dyer replied, times change. And it has been an unspoken precedent for 30 years that law and lo be bestowed on any functional creature born in this our new home. The question is merely how far to extend the definition of functionality. Is the ability to communicate verbally its sine qua non? She is intelligent, and she learns quickly and thoroughly. I move for La Frieza. The girl sat and played with white pebbles by the fire while they discussed her social standing. The beginning of the end, the beginning of the end, muttered Low Hawk. We must preserve something. The end of the beginning, sighed La Dyer. Everything must change. Which had been their standing exchange as long as I remember. Once, before I was born, so goes the story, Low Hawk grew disgruntled with village life and left. Rumors came back. He'd gone to a moon of Jupiter to dig out some metal that wormed in blue veins through the rock. Later, he'd left the Jovian satellite to sail a steaming sea on some world where three suns cast his shadows on the doffing deck of a ship bigger than our whole village. Still later, he was reported chopping away through a substance that melted to poisonous fumes someplace so far there were no stars at all during the year-long nights. When he had been away 7 years, La Dyer apparently decided it was time he came back. She left the village and returned a week later, with Low Hawk. They say he hadn't changed much, so nobody asked him about where he'd been, but from his return dated the quiet argument that joined La Dyer and Low Hawk faster than love. Must preserve, Low Hawk. Must change, La Dyer. Usually Low Hawk gave in, for La Dyer was a woman of wide reading, great culture, and wit. Low Hawk had been a fine hunter in his youth and a fine warrior when there was need, and he was wise enough to admit in action, if not words, that such need had gone. But this time Low Hawk was adamant. Communication is vital. If we are ever to become human beings, I would sooner allow some short-faced dog who comes from the hills and can approximate 40 or 50 of our words to make known his wishes than a mute child. Oh, the battles my youth has seen. When we fought off the giant spiders, or when the wave of fungus swept from the jungle, or when we destroyed with lime and salt the 20-foot slugs that pushed up from the ground, we won these battles because we could speak to one another. Shout instructions, bellow a warning, whisper plans in the twilight darkness of the source cave. Yes, I would sooner give la or lo to a talking dog. Somebody made a nasty comment. Well, you couldn't very well give her a la. People snickered. But the older folk are very good at ignoring that sort of irreverence. Everybody ignores a la anyway. Anyway, the business never did get settled. Toward moondown, people wandered off when somebody suggested adjournment. Everyone creaked and groaned to his feet. Frieza, dark and beautiful, was still playing with the pebbles. Frieza didn't move when a baby, because she knew how to already. Watching her in the flicker, I was only 8 myself, I got the first hint of why she didn't talk. She picked up one of the pebbles and hurled it viciously at the head of the guy who'd made the comment about love. Even at 8, she was sensitive. She missed, and I alone saw. But I saw, too, the snarl that twisted her face, the effort in her shoulders, the way her toes curled. She was sitting cross-legged as she threw it. Both fists were knotted in her lap. You see, she didn't use her hands or feet. The pebble just rose from the dirt, shot through the air, missed its target, and chattered away through low leaves. But I saw she threw it. All prologue to Why Lo Easy, Lo Little John, and Lo Me Don't Herd Goats No More. Frieza started tagging along, dark and ambiguous, running and jumping with Little John in a double dance to his single song and my music, play wrestling with Easy, and walking with me up the brambly meadow holding my hand. Who ever heard of lawing or lowing somebody you're herding goats with, or laughing with, or making love with? All of which I did with Frieza. She would turn on a rock to stare at me with leaves shaking beside her face, or come tearing towards me through the stones, between her graceful gait and her shadow in the rocks, all suspended and real motion was, and was released when she was in my arms laughing, the one sound she did make, loving it in her mouth. She brought me beautiful things, and kept the dangerous ones away. I think she did it the same way she threw the pebble. One day I noticed that ugly and harmful things just weren't happening. No lions, no condor bats. The goats stayed together. The kids didn't get lost and kept from cliffs. Little John, you don't have to come up this morning. Well, Lobi, if you don't think, go on, stay home. So Easy, Frieza, and me went out with the goats. The beautiful things were like the flock of albino hawks that moved to the meadow, or the mother woodchuck who brought her babies for us to see. Easy, there isn't enough work for all of us here. Why don't you find something else to do? But I like coming up here, Lobi. Frieza and me can take care of the herd, but I don't get lost, Easy. He said something else, and I picked up a stone in my foot and hefted it. He looked confused, then lumbered away. Imagine coming on like that with Easy. Frieza and I had the field and the herd to ourselves, alone. It stayed good and beautiful, with unremembered flowers beyond rises when we ran. If there were poisonous snakes, they turned off in lengths of scarlet, never coiling. And ah, did I make music! Something killed her. She was hiding under a grove of lazy willows, the trees that drooped lower than weeping, and I was searching and calling and grinning. She shrieked! That's the only sound I ever heard her make other than laughter. The goats began to bleat. I found her under the tree, face in the dirt. As the goats bleated, the meadow went to pieces on their rasping noise. I was silent, confused, amazed by my despair. I carried her back to the village. I remember La Dyer's face as I walked into the village square with a limber body in my arms. Lobi, what in the world? How did she... Oh, no, Lobi. Lobi, no! So, easy, and Little John took the herd again. I went and sat at the entrance to the source cave, sharpened my blade, gnawed my nails, slept, and fought alone on the flat rock, which is where we began. Once Easy came to talk to me. "Hey, Lobi, help us with the goats. The lions are back. Not a lot of them, but we could still use you." He squatted, still towering me by a foot, shook his head. "Poor Lobi." He ran his hairy fingers over my neck. "We need you. You need us. Help us hunt for the two missing kids. Go away." Poor Lobi. But he went. Later, Little John came. He stood around for a minute, thinking of something to say, but by the time he did, he had to go behind a bush, got embarrassed, and didn't come back. Low Hawk came, too. "Come hunting, Low Lobi. There's a bull been seen a mile south, horns as long as your arm, they say." "I feel rather non-functional today," I said, which is not the sort of thing to joke about with Low Hawk. He retired, humphing, but I just wasn't up to his archaic manner. When Ladire came, though, she was different. As I said, she has great wit and learning. She came and sat with a book on the other side of the flat rock and ignored me for an hour, till I got mad. "What are you doing here?" I asked at last. "Probably the same thing you are. What's that?" She looked serious. "Why don't you tell me?" I went back to my knife, sharpening my machete. "I'm sharpening my mind," she said. "There is something to be done that will require an edge on both." "Huh? Is that an inarticulate way of asking what is it?" "Huh?" I said again. "Yeah, what is it?" "To kill whatever killed Frieza." She closed her book. "Will you help?" I leaned forward, feet and hands knotting, opened my mouth. Then Ladire wavered behind tears. I cried. After all that time, it surprised me. I put my forehead on the rock and bawled. "Low Lobi," she said, the way Low Hawk had, only it was different. And then she stroked my hair, like Easy, only different. As I gained control again, I sensed both her compassion and embarrassment, like Little John's, different. I lay on my side, feet and hands clutching each other, sobbing towards the cavity of me. Ladire rubbed my shoulder, my bunch distended hip, opening me with gentleness and words. "Let's talk about mythology, Lobi, or let's you listen. We've had quite a time assuming the rationale of this world. The irrational presents just as much of a problem. You remember the legend of the Beatles? You remember the Beatle Ringo left his love Maureen, even though she treated him tender? He was the one Beatle who did not sing, so the earliest forms of the legend go. After a hard day's night, he and the rest of the Beatles were torn apart by screaming girls, and he and the other Beatles returned, finally at one with the great rock and the great roll. I put my head in Ladire's lap. She went on. "Well, that myth is a version of a much older story that is not so well known. There are no 45s or 33s from the time of this older story. There are only a few written versions, and reading is rapidly losing its interest for the young. In the older story, Ringo was called Orpheus. He, too, was torn apart by screaming girls. But the details are different. He lost his love in this version, Eurydice, and she went straight to the great rock and the great roll, where Orpheus had to go to get her back. He went singing, for in this version, Orpheus was the greatest singer instead of the silent one. In myths, things always turn into their opposites as one version supersedes the next." I said, "How could he go to the great rock and the great roll? That's all death and all life." "He did."
"Did he bring her back?"
"No." I looked from Ladire's old face and turned my head in her lap to the trees. "He lied then. He didn't really go. He probably went off into the woods for a while and just made up some story when he came back." "Perhaps,"
Ladire said. I looked up again. He wanted her back, I said. I know he wanted her back. But if he had gone any place where there was even a chance of getting her, he wouldn't have come back unless she was with him. That's how I know he must have been lying about going to the Great Rock and the Great Roll, I mean. All life is a rhythm, she said as I sat up. All death is a rhythm suspended, a syncopation before life resumes. She picked up my machete. Play something. She held the handle out. Make music. I put the blade to my mouth, rolled over on my back, curled around the bright, dangerous length, and licked the sounds. I didn't want to, but it formed in the hollow of my tongue, and breathing carried it into the knife. Low, first slow, I closed my eyes, feeling each note in the quadrangle of shoulder blades and buttocks pressed on the rock. Notes came with only the meter of my own breathing, and from beneath that there was the quickening of the muscles of my fingers and toes that began to cramp for the faster, closer dance of the heart's time. The morning hymn began to quake. Lobi, when you were a boy, you used to beat the rock with your feet, make a rhythm, a dance, a drum. Drum, Lobi. I let the melody speed, then flailed it up an octave so I could handle it. That means only fingers. Drum, Lobi. I rocked to my feet and began to slap my soles against the stone. Drum. I opened my eyes long enough to see the blood spiders scurry. The music laughed, pound and pound, trill and warble, and Ladire laughed for me, too, to play hunched down while sweat quivered on my nape, threw up my head, and it dribbled into the small of my back, while I, immobile above the waist, flung my hips, beating cross rhythms with toes and heels, blade up to prick the sun, new sweat trickling behind my eyes, rolling the crevice of my corded neck. Drum, my low lobe, drum, my low Ringo, play, my low Orpheus. Ladire cried, "Oh, Lobi!" She clapped and clapped. Then, when the only sound was my own breath, the leaves, and the stream, she nodded, smiling. "Now you've mourned properly." I looked down. My chest glistened, my stomach wrinkled and smoothed and wrinkled. Dust on the tops of my feet had become tan mud. Now you're almost ready to do what must be done. Go now, hunt, herd goats, play more. Soon Lodoric will come for you. All sound from me stopped. Breath and heart too, I think, a syncopation before the rhythm resumed. Lodoric? Go. Enjoy yourself before you begin your journey. Frightened, I shook my head, turned, fled from the cave mouth. Lodoric?